Good evening.
We're
Thank you, Johann Sebastian Bach and his Second Violin Concerto No. 2 for Violin and Orchestra. Saw that live. What a beautiful piece. I'm David Katzmeyer, your host here at the Cycles of Change radio program, coming to you live, as I do every Thursday night, 8 o'clock New York time and 5 p.m. in California. It's September 27, 2012, and we're going to be talking about the arts and the manifestation of creation as a reflection, a mirror of our soul and where we are in society. Tonight's special guest is artist Bruce M. Coyle of brucemcoyle.com. And we're going to be talking about art in the last 500 years as a reflection of society. Bruce is not only a scholar on art itself, but he is a true artist. He has an important event coming up this November in Philadelphia. We're going to be talking about his We the People art show that's taking place at the Grand Masonic Lodge of Pennsylvania this November 29th, 2012, and also on November 30th in Philadelphia. You can find out about this on his site, brucemcoyle.com. Coyle is spelled C-O-Y-L-E. And also, to help get this going, there's a link there for the Kickstarter project to help fund this. There's an enormous expense to get this program going. So anybody who wants to support the arts can do what I did, which is go into the Kickstarter and help support this project. We're going to be getting to our special guest, Bruce M. Coyle, in just a few minutes. But I want to announce a couple of things, upcoming events related to cycles. The CPAC Conference of 2012, their 8th annual conference, is being held in California on October 5 through October 7. Here at the CPAC Conference, you can rediscover the wisdom of the ancients, Conference on Precession and Ancient Knowledge. Ancient cultures around the world believe that consciousness and history move in a vast cycle of time with alternating dark and golden ages. Plato called it the Great Year. Today, we know it as one precession of the equinox, an obscure astronomical motion, and consider the Golden Age to be just a myth. But are we correct? An increasing amount of evidence suggests that long before the Dark Ages, mankind had a deep understanding of astronomy, mathematics, holistic healing, and a profound ability to live in tune with nature. So they ask you to join them and discover the wisdom of the ancients. CPAC 2012 8th Annual Conference in Rio and Rancho Mirage, California, October 5 through 7. Now, one of the featured speakers there will be Walter Cruttenden of the Binary Research Institute. He was a guest here on this program. You'll find his show in the archives where we talk about the cycles of astronomy and the effect on our lives. You can also find his site, binaryresearchinstitute.org. Also, we have a special event coming up here at the Cycles of Change radio program Saturday, October 6th, 2012. This is going to be a closed program featuring Norm Winsky. It's an introduction to financial astrology. It's a webinar that we're holding. It's closed. This is going to be the only fee program that you can come in and join for only $21. We're going to do a special hour plus of a 2 hours program with Norm. You're going to have him live, and he's going to present how he's had his success in finance using financial astrology. He's been writing the Astro Trend newsletter since 1977. He's been featured on social media. He's been featured on live radio programs. He was a broker himself on the Chicago board. This is all based on experience, and you can find out how to attend this special event where we're going to take questions in multiple forms of media by going to our site at kalarhythms.org. That's K-A-L-A rhythms.org. to tell you a little bit about the conference. Norm will share with you his, via his 40 years of experience, major astrological keys to forecasting in the market. Norm will detail all of the astrological signs and planets and how they relate to the various markets. These are the factors that Norm uses accurately to forecast the markets. We will take live questions, and you will be granted live one-on-one consultation with Norm during the week following the show via telephone. This is just going to be you and Norm, and you will receive a free complimentary issue of the Esther Trend newsletter. It will all be for just $21. Go to Kalarhythms, KALARhythms.org. Look for Norm Winsky on the homepage. Tonight's program, 500 years of art. Where have we been in 500 years? Well, it's a different world every century, that's for sure. And we're often raised learning about political history, military history. We memorize some dates. We can name some key figures. But all of the things that happen, whether it's in the changing world of finance, or if it's in the changing boundaries of nations, or if it's in the changing leaderships, or which country in Europe is the center of the world at that time, or if it is indeed in Europe, where we find the center. These things run parallel to all of the other changes that are happening in our lives. And we don't always learn the social history of how we have changed. But the social history is reflected in all things, certainly reflected in music. It's reflected in our arts. It's reflected in our sports. In fact, in everything that we do. So we're going to have a special time tonight exploring the last half millennium with Bruce and how he has incorporated his sense of history into an upcoming show, We the People Art Show, in November in Philadelphia. So I believe Bruce is on the line. And folks, I want you to know that if you have any questions, we're going to take questions a little bit later on in the program. If you'd like to call in and ask a question, just call us at 347-884-9593. That's 347-884-9593. You can call in, just hang on the line. The board's already lighting up. We're going to get to your calls in just a minute, just a little bit. But I'd like to introduce you to tonight's guest, Bruce M. Coyle. Bruce, are you there?
Yes, I am. How you doing, David?
All right, Bruce. Thank you for joining us here. Well, we've got a lot to talk about, 500 years. But, Bruce, let me ask you a little bit. Tell us a little bit about the show that you have coming up. This is a special event that you've been putting a lot of preparation for, the We the People Art Show in Philadelphia this November 29 and 30. What's up with that, Bruce?
Well, I'm trying to reflect how we manage to accomplish things as a society and show this through my artwork. When we pull together, we can overcome just about anything. And when we split and when we work separately, and I'm trying to stay more towards the positive side of this with this show, showing some of the people and everyday people that when they work together, what we can accomplish. And when you look at the great things that ourselves in this country alone, not just here, but around the world, have been able to do when the people work towards a particular goal, we've been going through a small crisis, and some will say a large crisis, over the last 30 years. And but we're coming out of it, and I'm trying to reflect that in the work. And just reminding people, look at some of the characters in here, and look at that. Look at your neighbor, what they're doing in their community. This is how we're trying to put the show and present the show. We've been working on putting this show together for 18 months now, just the logistics of it, and we're finally getting there. In a couple more months, we'll be there.
I'm certainly looking forward to this. I want folks to know that Bruce is in Pennsylvania, as is this program, and I traveled to his local studio and saw some of the works that are going on display as they were developing. And when I heard Bruce's description of what they mean, what they represent, and got a feeling for our history, kind of in a way I never really did, I realized that we had to have Bruce on the show. And I wanted to time your appearance, Bruce, before we did before November to let more people know about this upcoming program. But you really research the history and bring it through in every way in your art.
Well, thank you. I enjoy the history. I truly do enjoy the history. And bringing us up from the beginning to present day and showing the different characters have made serious contributions to our society and people that have sometimes been forgotten. Just from our own personal family histories, if people know their personal family history, they'll find characters within their history that have contributed to our society in
yes.
a way that had lasting ramifications to it, from George Washington till present. Well, what led up to them believing? These are men at that point in time that put everything on the line
yes.
for a belief. And American artists weren't highly thought of at that time. Most of them had gone to Europe to study.
Yep.
But they were fighting for their own recognition at the time.
Yep.
And George Washington wasn't particularly fond, although he had several portraits done, he wasn't particularly fond of sitting for portraits.
He was a man of action, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Sitting still, yes.
He didn't enjoy sitting still for portraits, but when I was teaching a portrait painting class at Winitor down in Delaware, and they were giving us, we were walking through, there was an exhibition there of 17th century American artists, portrait artists. And
yep.
as we're walking through, they were giving the stories about the personalities of the people that they painted, not so much the artist,
yes.
which was kind of interesting. And George was one of them, of course.
Yes.
And he got frustrated with a couple artists because he thought they took too long or wasn't quite him. And the argument now is that what you see on the dollar bill is more of a fatherly representation rather than an actual representation, although it's close to him.
Yes.
He had a longer face, and he had a more pronounced nose
yes.
than what you see in most portraits. So it was fun to do. It was fun to teach that course.
And you taught at the Winterthur Museum here at
yeah.
the Pennsylvania-Delaware border. This is one of the more notable museums in the area here. And you were teaching adult artists there, were you not?
Yes. I enjoyed those artists very much. Some of them carried over down to the Center of the Arts where I also taught, Center for the Creative Arts in Delaware, in York Glen. And quite a few of them carried down there to continue their studies in portrait and figure drawing. So I enjoyed working with, I like working with young artists, but I like working with older artists that have been around. They like to, they're more persistent. Younger artists are more excitable.
Yes. And, you know, let us always keep that enthusiasm in art, because what is art without emotion? As I looked at the various canvases in your studio, as you were putting these together in preparation for the November show, I got to see encapsulized a great period of American history, but at different frozen periods of time. You had a remarkable drawing there of Ben Franklin. You have President Obama. You have a beautiful scene of a large canvas working on the railroad with many, many different peoples there. And you could see all these different times in history being represented in a way that you don't quite get out of the old lithographs that you see in the old books studying history. So it was covering the last couple hundred years plus in a microcosm of how art reflects history, and it reflects the people, it reflects the revolutions, it reflects everything. And when we look back over the last 500 years, beyond our own country, but in the entire world civilization, the point of view of this program, basically, is that all of civilization moves in cycles, and we can define them simply as mind, heart, and body. Or to be more technical, we have a physical cycle in the world, an emotional cycle in the world, and an intellectual cycle in the world. These cycles last for hundreds of years. This is charted on Kalarhythms, K-A-L-A-Rhythms.org, and it's interesting when you look at the different highs and lows. At a point when all of these cycles were low, we call that the Dark Ages. When the intellectual cycle peaked during the time of Bach, rising through the life of Shakespeare, that was the Baroque era, where everything was very fancy, the writing was very developed, the sculpture had these fancy Ionian scrolls, the dress of the people was very fancy with the cuffs and the ruffles and everything. In fact, the word Baroque itself comes from the French, meaning an irregularly shaped egg. And that was the, given the name of that era because everything was so irregular with the fancy ornamentation. Detail is an element of an intellectual high. Well, that's just an example. But what happened after that? The emotional cycle peaked. You know what we call that period? The Romantic era. Well, how does that go together? But these cycles went down after the times of the Romantic era and the Baroque era, and they were low during the Victorian era. It was low intellectualism, it was low spirit, but something else rose and began the Industrial Revolution. Just after the turn of the 19th century, the physical cycle broke up, became high, the only cycle that was high in the 19th and 20th centuries, and that gave us the machine age, might made right. So what's happening now? What's happening after we come out of the 20th century? Physical high, emotional, intellectual low. And these cycles are reversing. What's happened to art during that time? And where is art going now, Bruce?
Well, art got very stagnant for a while. I mean, we seem to be moving into a high energy in the middle of the 60s, and then we flattened out again. And now what I see happening is people are getting excited all over again. You're starting to see their minds really start to create. I had a young student, he just went off to college, and I watched him. He worked feverishly to create, and every time his brush touched the canvas, he soaked everything up like a sponge. He was so excited. And they're more interested in where our society's going. This next generation coming up of writers, dancers, painters, sculptors, I think you're going to see an explosion of creativity, which we've been really kind of lacking. You know, it's been, it hasn't been as high as what it was, you know, like my childhood influences, where they were actually pushing a little bit farther. But it, when you talk about the Baroque, they were coming off of Giravasio or Caravaggio's end of his reign as one of the most popular artists at the time, and it was very moral and very structured. So when you go into the Baroque, it's more fanciful, and that, of course, the paintings followed the architecture. The architecture came first, and when we got into that period, their minds started expanding a little bit more as far as fun, and as far as, you know, wanting to enjoy and looking at the world with more lightheartedness instead of so heavy on the end of the moral. They still can lose their ethics, but it changed a great deal.
About what time, what period was that, Bruce?
Oh, that would have been the late mid-17th century.
Yes.
And then, of course, by the time we actually got to the 18th century, you start to see another change again. And in that change, it was still more structured, but a lighter touch to not as the hard line, hard figure. And that became a very exciting time. But then as we went into that time, that was, they were actually, those artists were actually fighting against, almost rebelliously fighting against subtly the society that was there. Because when we hit the Victorian and Edwardian time, everything was so tight. The people, you went from the sciences being really pushed hard to more of a laid back, you know, almost hard in the respect that they didn't really want to stretch out too far, stretch their minds too far. And then, of course, you get to the 19th century, the end of the 19th century, and things really, they really started to take off. I mean, you were coming, you had the Impressionists who were breaking all the rules and nobody respected them at the beginning.
Yeah.
And today that style is still respected. And I even had my great uncle was one of the part of William Glackens, the Ashcan group, at the turn of the century, 20th
yes.
century, in this country. And they put the first art show on in this country, consisting of more than one artist. They called them the Immortal Eight. And they struck a nerve. They really.
Yeah.
And then he went buying over to Europe, and he was buying up all the Impressionist paintings he could find. And he was getting them for the Barnes Foundation, but he was getting them rather cheap because nobody was respecting them at that time. Everything
it was early in the period, yeah.
Yeah. And now, of course, they're masterpieces that are worth millions and millions of dollars because everybody understands what they were trying to do.
Well, the avant-garde will eventually take the lead. You know, there's a period of the cycles after a cycle bottoms out that it goes through the winter of the cycle. That's a period of abandonment. It's a iconoclastic time where you experiment with a reach towards the future. Things become nebulous. They become progressive. And at the end of the 19th century, we had both the emotional low and the intellectual low, which made things more laid back, as you put it, bottom out and then enter into the winter. So by the end of the 19th century and rising throughout all of the 20th century, we were experimental in emotional and intellectual things. So you had Alexander Calder sculptures, you had abstract expressionism, you had an impressionistic art, which had never been seen before. And this was all considered crazy. And in music, what was going on, progressive jazz, you would play around the note that you never hear. It's kind of like the sculpture is defined by the spaces around which one sculptures, since the spaces that define the sculpture more than the actual solid parts. So it's a very abstract, nebulous period. And that was defining all of the 20th century during the physical high, when things became very massive and the sculptures representing nothing were enormous and sitting out in these plazas in downtown cities and everything like that. So it's really a confluence of where all the cycles are at one time, but it's constantly being reflected in our art. I believe. So in any case, Bruce, are you still connected? Oh, I think we're having a little technical difficulty, folks. Okay. Looks like Bruce is having a little difficulty there, but we have a caller. Let's see if we can take a question. Bruce, I know you're going to reconnect. Let me take our first call. Caller from area code 860. You're connected to us. We're waiting for Bruce to come back. Do you have a question?
Hi, am I on?
Yes, you are. I'm
Dave. Oh, great.
Host. You're live.
Hey, I'm Doug Branson calling, also an artist. I've been listening, fascinating your own words also about art and your own expertise and Mr. Coyle's expertise. I'm just wondering where he's getting the ideas for these paintings, for these the particular body of work that he's working on right now.
That's a great question. And we're going to find out as soon as he reconnects. What happened is his call has dropped. And we're waiting for him to come back on the line. We were talking to Bruce M. Coyle here at the Cycles of Change radio program, where we were looking back at the last 500 years of civilization, our social history, as it is reflected by the art. And artist Bruce M. Coyle has his show coming up in Philadelphia for the We the People art show at the Masonic Lodge in Philadelphia this November 29 and November 30. You can find out about this at his site, brucemcoyle.com. But we're hoping that he's able to reconnect. He might be in a difficult area. Circumstances being with what he's doing with the show, he had to call in on a cell phone, and we were working fine until the call dropped. So let's wait and see if he comes back. But your question is that how does he get his inspiration? What inspires him to do these pieces? Yes. Well, we're going to find out. Sometimes these things happen. We had a show last week where we had some solar flares or something that was causing interference. No calls dropped, but we were getting a little bit of buzzing from the phone caller that came in. These things can happen. But while we're doing this, I invite everybody to go over to Bruce's site, brucemcoyle.com, and find out what he's doing there. because he has a list of his oil paintings, his watercolors, his pencil, pen, and charcoal, pen and ink and charcoal. There are many samples that you can click on to see what he's done over the years. He also has prints available. He did the Brandywine Valley print, which is something of a landmark in Chester County, Pennsylvania. It is a mural of different parts of Chester County, beautiful rural old stone buildings. Of course, this is where Andrew Wyeth lived. I had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Wyeth. And a lot of the scenes that you saw in Wyeth's paintings are right here in Chester County. Well, the Brandywine Valley mural that he painted is now hanging in the offices of many officials here in the Chester County Courthouse and so forth. Many of the attorneys have it. And the town of Oxford, Pennsylvania, also commissioned Bruce to do a mural of Oxford, Pennsylvania, and he did one of Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. These are remarkable. You can see them represented on brucemcoyle.com. So also on the show that's coming up, there is some new pictures that are going to be put up there that represent, these are photographs of his work that will be at the show. And they'll be coming up onto his site in the next week or so. You'll be able to see that. And there may be some prints available of those too coming up. But we'll find that out. Well, unfortunately, I think that he's having trouble with his call. It may be a little bit before we get him back on the line. But yes, we were looking back at how the arts, running a parallel with music, is showing us a representation of our social history that reflects the cycles of change. We have highs and lows. This is based on the theory of colorhythms, which is basically the biorhythms of the world. Now, what do I mean by that? We now know, and it is accepted in the medical community, that we have cycles that are internal within us, and they move like clockwork from the time that we're born. There is a 23-day physical cycle within us that has highs and lows. There is a 28-day emotional cycle born within us with highs and lows, and a 33-day intellectual cycle, highs and lows. These were discovered by various doctors in Australia, elsewhere in Europe in the 19th century, more than one doctor is making observations, some of them doing simultaneous discoveries, documenting it, and not knowing that the other cycle had been discovered or the same cycle had been discovered by someone else. And we have these moving within us. So the fractal relationship, Bruce is with us, we're going to bring him back in. Well, let me wrap this up. The fractal relationship is that if we have biorhythms moving with our mind, heart, and soul, then the civilizations that we create have them too, only they move over greater periods of time, in this case centuries, because larger institutions are slower to change. So we wanted to see how this notion that we have internal rhythms in civilization is reflected in art that reflects everything. So let's connect back to Bruce. Bruce, welcome back. We had a little technical difficulty. Glad you're here.
Yeah, sorry about that. I think that was on my end.
Okay, and Doug, is it from area code 860? You had a question, right?
I'm still here.
Okay, Doug, you want to ask your question again so Bruce can hear it straight from you?
Sure. I wanted to ask Mr. Coyle, where do you get the ideas for your paintings, or where have the ideas come from for this show and the body of work that you're working on right now?
Well, the body of work I'm working on right now and the show that we're doing come from my love of history and my enthusiasm towards our society as a whole, not just here but across the world. Right now I'm focusing on America and what we can accomplish when we work together. David had mentioned the one piece with the train, and you had all the workers out there. There's every nationality in the country, the Asian population, the African-American population, the Irish, the Scottish, and they didn't always get along, but they worked. When they worked together, look what they accomplished. It's just an example of where we can go. Things that seem insurmountable, we conquer. We don't conquer because we're lighthearted about it. Because we're explorers. We want to keep pushing. This country was called the Great Experiment, and it's still unfinished. and it will always be unfinished because we can always reach farther. So the idea of the show is I've seen so many people in our society working against each other in recent years. I just want to show them what we have accomplished in our past by working together to accomplish any goal. And we're capable of doing that if we choose to use our minds. And really, I'm trying to reignite that flame of working together, working towards a goal as a society. And
that's
I think we can accomplish
thought.
It.
It's a beautiful thought, Bruce. You know, it's often said that if you don't know where you were, you don't know where you are. If you don't know where you are, you don't know where you're going. And very often, for us to have an emotional intelligence of where we are, it's represented in art. Whether you're going all the way back to handprints on caves or stone remnants that are uncovered that turn out to be thousands of years old, or if it's a very intricate works that have been developed over the last few thousand years, time and again, we can mark pretty much what lifestyles were like, what the heart and the minds of the people were like, not just the structures that are left behind, because we had this chronology, this continuum through the world of art.
The handprint, David?
Yes.
I'm sorry about that. The handprints on caves, when you mentioned that, that told a story, what food was available, what tribes were around, what they were doing. Every piece tells a story. And
every piece tells a story.
The old adage, if you don't know your history, you're bound to repeat it. It holds true.
It
does.
Yeah, so history doesn't quite repeat itself verbatim, but it does rhyme. And what we don't want to do is repeat our mistakes. And what we do want to do is cherish that which is really golden about us. And for us to understand that, we're constantly moving, evolving. Deepak Chopra believes that we're on the verge of another evolutionary step in development, going from the survival of the fittest to the survival of the wisest. Well, how do we get there? How do we get at the foot of our next step? Because of what we accumulate and what we build. And that is a common thread. You know, we're born with instincts. We know to pull our hand from the stove. A baby knows how to nurse on mama. We understand things. We have a startle reflex if we're scared. All of these things were developed over millennia of time, but there's a lot more things than just reflexes in us. There is our soul. This is our being. This is our heart. And we realize ourselves in emotional intelligence when we're able to take a look, a reflection at where we are now. The mind is like the eye that can see every part of the body except itself. But thanks to art throughout the centuries, throughout the millennia, we have the reflection, because that's the only way the eye sees itself is through reflection. So art is a mirror of who we are, and it's something to be preserved. So this is why I'm very excited that we're taking a look at art and music and all of the arts as an identification of who we are instead of just the history of war.
Well, and you know, when usually war is what most people focus on. Well, there was this war, and this battle. And although they have an importance because of social change, the art reflected this. They've also reflected, you know, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. You know, that little voice that tells you, this isn't such a good idea. We need to listen to that once in a while, a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And when it says, you know what, I can change just a small part. The members of our society, the members of any society, no matter what your status is, you help your community, you help your neighbor. You're changing society. You're helping people to see. And it's contagious. When people start to see people, really other people use their minds, yeah, and use more of their emotional combined with the intellectual, you're going to see them achieve a lot more than what we have, and in a better way, I think.
And when we're achieving more, it's bound to be reflected more in the arts, and it's easy to underestimate.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. You mentioned that there's a bit of a rise that this new generation, I've heard it described as we've gone from Generation X to Generation Y. Only you're going to spell Y, W-H-Y, because people are asking why, because they're more inquisitive and they're going beyond themselves. We have indigo children who are absolutely exceptional in their spirituality. And this is a bellwether for a long-term trend. The theory of cycles that I'm putting forth to you, ladies and gentlemen, is that as we are going through a world crisis now, the details of which I'm not going to lay out, but you know what they are, with the things that have happened in the world in the last 12 years, this is all the birth pangs of a new era. And the belief here is that the era that we're going into is a new age of reason and a new age of romanticism. The machine age is over. The military-industrial complex will not define the power centers of the world now. Our power centers are more conceptual, they're more ideological, and they're more virtual. That's why the book came out recently called The World is Flat, showing that things aren't defined so much by national boundaries. In fact, even warfare isn't defined by national boundaries anymore. It's more defined by people centered in ideologies and communicating over the internet. So what we're seeing now is becoming a more intellectual, transcendent society, but we're also entering into a new age of reason. Believe it or not, through all this crisis, this is the birth pangs of a new era. So as we go into reason and we go into romanticism, I believe that we are going to have our own Baroque era over the next couple of centuries. And I'm excited about it.
A wonderful thing, but I see it with the younger generation coming up.
Yes. Well, the young are always contemporaneous, and you know, you have the sentinel of life, and us older ones, we're going to die off, the new ones keep coming in. So it's very important for us to focus on the arts so that we don't lose ourselves. We got to remember what we're living for. Yes, we need bread. Yes, we need roof when it rains, but art and poetry and writing and love and so forth, these are the things we are surviving for. That's why I'm excited about your work, Bruce, because every piece of work that I saw in your studio represented us. It was like looking into the soul of us all with every piece. Now, a lot of your inspiration came from the Renaissance period, didn't it, Bruce? The old masters like Michelangelo and so forth? Oh, Bruce, are we having a little technical difficulty here? Let me see. Yes, we are, ladies and gentlemen, but fear not. Bruce will be back. And in the meantime, if you'd like to get on the air and have a question for Bruce when he does come back, you can call in at area code 347-884-9593. That call-in number is 347-884-9593. But I was asking Bruce about his inspiration from the Middle Ages and from Michelangelo, and so because so many of his works actually reflected that style. And I know that Michelangelo is one of his heroes, and he has been developing detail in his technique in order to better represent what he wanted. And now when he was given this theme of our history of the United States here at We the People coming up in Philadelphia next month, or in November, he was putting his knowledge of history to work. That's what inspired me for the theme of this program, art as a reflection of ourselves over the last half millennium. Sometimes all we have of basically extinct civilizations is the style and remnants of architecture and the few bits of artwork that are left on broken shards of pottery that we unearth. And then we try to put the pieces together. And sometimes we are able to figure out the time that a certain pharaoh reigned. We're able to understand that this was a very artistic culture or this was a very functional survivalist culture just by looking at how it was reflected in art. So really, that is a mirror of our souls. So if you want to understand the history of the world, don't just read what's in the conventional history books, although that is a wonderful, wonderful way to learn. Also look into the history of our arts, look into the history of music, and look into the history of every form of creation that we have. Look into the style of our clothing. What I have found in the study of cycles is that they are all moving in the same direction at the same time. Like I mentioned, in the Baroque era, very intellectually high time. The music was filled with mordants and trills and fancy ornamentation. The architecture was had the intricate scrolls, and our writing was very intricate. Bruce, welcome,
hey.
Welcome back here.
We're on a ride, David. I'm having some technical problems here.
Well, that's all right. That's all right. We can still cover. I was asking you right before we went on a down cycle. What is a period of time that you find very inspiring in the development of your style of art, Bruce?
Well, of course, I first studied looking at Da Vinci, Michelangelo, Raphael, Donatello, all the way up until we got to Americans actually making a statement with their art and getting into the awareness of Impressionism and what they were looking at. And then we went through a lot of Cubism, Abstract Impressionism, and then pop art. So all
that was the experimental time with Cubism and Duchamp and so forth. That was all
right.
During the late 19th, early 20th century experimental time, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. And these guys were taking a lot of chances. They were with their art and with, because they were still trying to make a living. And
yet they did it anyway. That's her. And okay, Bruce, can you still hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. We can hear you. Very good.
Okay. Yeah, so it was a very exciting time. And they took chances. They went, they were bold in their expressions and how they handled their pain. And they believed that they could make an impression on society. And society made an impression on them because their first ideas came from the world around them.
Yes, and as you had bold expressions of experimental abandonment of the past, things that had never been done before, this was done under the clamor and the din of the machine age when we had the big factories roaring out with these giant textile mills and every other kind of machine, and we started to get into mechanizing automobiles. The assembly line was invented in 1913. The city streets were no longer filled with the hooves of horses on cobblestones. It was the roar of vehicles, and we had cranes and we had bulldozers shaping the landscape, building it in the city. It was a very noisy time. It was a very bold time, a very physical time during the physical high cycle. And yet we were constantly experimenting, abandoning the old styles. And look at the giant buildings that went up into the cities. Big, tall buildings that are absolutely plain because we abandoned the style. It was an experiment.
You had an Art Nouveau movement. Then you had Art Deco. And Deco was very hard lines. But then we got to the very, as you say, plain buildings. And we lost a certain amount of expression there.
We abandoned the past, but went boldly towards an experimental future. And that pretty much defined a lot of the 20th century. And so we had the art of Cubism, and we had Abstract Expressionism, which is totally non-representational. I mean, Jackson Pollock was...
Oh, yeah.
He was out there, wasn't he?
Oh, he was pretty far out, yeah. He had a different approach, and when he actually, when the Gutenbergs actually saw his work, they got so inspired, and there was no definition to speak of with his work, and it was bold and it was big. He was definitely a creator of a mood, and that's why there was a lot of that going on. How do I create a mood without boundaries?
Yes.
And that's what they were trying to do. A lot of them very successfully did that. And then, of course, we went into pop art, which was more representational of, when you go up through the 60s, the 50s and the 60s, you start to see more of this. And it was simpler forms, but really bright, bold colors to grab your attention.
Totally mod, man.
Yeah, it was. And then, of course, we went through the 70s, and as we start to go through the 70s, it seemed like we were a downtime economically. We were a downtime creatively towards the end. And then we went into the 80s. And when we got to the 80s, things got really stale. In a
I
way.
Know, man. All the hippies cut their hair, like, totally.
Oh, yeah, they did. And they all became on the yuppie side and went into business.
An era of materialism.
Yes. And, you know, having a certain amount of certain taste for material, okay, fine. But it's got to be a balance. Life is, you got to have a balance in life. And we keep going back and forth. And eventually we do go through great periods where there's harmony and there's balance. And you see it reflected in the music. You see it reflected in the literature. I think we're coming out of a time of violent thinking and more to a time of a creative, we can do better. We can do better than this.
Well, that defines a century and the century after that that we're going into, because as the physical cycle declines, so is our inclination to fight. The military action as a first means of defense is more prevalent during a physical high. We're more passive during a physical low. So we're going to use our minds and think, look before we leap, theoretically, in these next two centuries. And we're going to be moved a little bit more by compassion. Like, well, there might be some gold, some oil, some titanium under your land. All we have to do is wipe out this village of people, and then we can dig up the earth and get it, and we'll increase our profits. And somebody's going to say, no, no. Don't want to do that.
You're already seeing this attitude take place over the last few years, and it's gaining momentum. It's like, wait a minute, let's think this through. Is there another way we can do this? Is there another way that we can get, well, and the big thing with renewable energy. But you're going to see this attitude, although a lot of people won't associate it this way, in the arts and in the sciences. You're going to see almost a maturity. We already did this. Now let's clean it up. Let's clean up how we do things. I think you're going to see the romance come back to the art world and back to the music and the literature. And,
yes.
I mean, when we went through jazz, it was kind of it's the one form of American music that nobody else can claim to.
It's ours.
It belongs to us. And it was a rebellion at the time. But how many people look at the jazz concerts that go on to this day? What's appreciated?
It's ours. It's all ours. It's an African-American development of music. Perhaps the only instrument invented here is a banjo, and that comes from an African instrument. That's an African-American instrument. And the styles of music that are our own have defined us for many, many years, and it's taken off in Europe big time, very popular. But it was there were periods in jazz, a progressive jazz period, in which it's very experimental. When the cycle's in the winter in the United States, but in the 1920s, the rhythms of the United States itself, not the world, the United States were all high. And we had Dixieland jazz, counterpoint, many melodies moving all at the same time because it was intricate in detail, as were the arts. You'll find that when music is very ornate, intricate, and polyphonic, you're going to find that the detail that you see in the paintings, the arts, and the sculpture is also very intricate. So I agree with you, Bruce, as we're moving forward into the next century, going back to the long term of world cycles, hundreds of years. This emotional rise of romanticism and intellectual high is going to bring us more detailed, more beautiful, and a feminization of art. So I think that that's going to rival some of the things that we've seen before.
Exactly what you say. You're going to see more people responding to it. It's not going to be in the background. You're going to see more people responding to it because after what we've just gone through and what the world has just gone through, and it's going to take some time because every movement takes a little time to get its steam and get rolling, you're going to see every average everyday people, and I say I don't think anybody's average or everyday, that's just a three-dimensional way of explaining it, but you're going to see the everyday person interested and excited about it, not just worried about whether they're going to have enough gas to get to work. They're going to be looking for something more out of life, more enjoyment, simpler pleasures, but exciting pleasures.
I totally agree. I believe that all boats are rising with this tide. There's not so much going to be a dichotomy where art is for the elite few and to be hung in museums gathering dust. Everyone is going to want more art in their lives, and they're going to choose a house just not necessarily on its location, but what is the style? Does it have feng shui, which is sort of a living three-dimensional art? Now, look at how that's been catching on, and that's a trend that's here to stay. It's manifesting in the very way that we live, the way cities are being laid out now. It's not the old 20th century model of all of these claptrap row homes centered around the behemoth standardized centralized factory putting out like items. We are living in a decentralized, diversified society. People are living where they want to live, not where they have to live. And so now we are making choices, not just what can we do, what do we want to do? And I think that's showing up in the arts and will continue to do so through generations to come.
I agree. With what we're saying, I'm excited at the time that we're heading into. And it's we're almost at the peak of what I'm saying as because people are frustrated. They can only take this for so long before they say enough. We want more. And it's not more as far as I want more money, I want to be better than the next, I want more enjoyment out of my life.
Yes.
And it's
yes.
Simple pleasures.
Yeah, we're becoming less materialistic. You know, the sense of acquisition at the cost of everything else defined the 20th century. And the theme here is that as we're moving forward, that's all over. We're doing more with less. We're sharing resources instead of saying, well, I got to have more for myself. And the way that we're doing shared vehicles, the way that we're doing shared communities and so forth, it's really less of the military kind of like flow chart of hierarchy of power of dominance in every system, whether it's a business model or whether it's the way that we're running our countries, and more it's an interactive, what I call polycephalous network, a sponge-like network of cooperation. And that cooperation, that is a part of what I call the feminization of society, in where you are considerate of another person rather than always trying to dominate another person. These things come and go with cycles. This is where we're going. So this is why I think the new romanticism in the arts. I have a cat here, and the cat likes to rearrange the furniture every way. Knocks up the door and says, it doesn't have feng shui. Folks, if you want to know the feng shui in your cat of your house, just look where the cat is sitting. They always know. They have the best taste. If you don't believe that, just ask them. You know, yeah, dogs have owner, cats have staff. But anyway, so we're going to see this rise continue throughout our society. I'm excited. So, I mean, Bruce, when I hear somebody like you, who's been an artist for many years, very accomplished, very astute in what you're doing, a teacher at Winnifer Museum, is doing a special event at the Masonic Lodge in November, and I hear you saying that we're moving towards more of a romantic period that's a long-term trend and more towards reason and so forth, that corroborates what I believe is happening with the trend in cycles. So I hope this is a trend that continues. So that's why I'm excited about 200 years of history coming up. What are some of the other paintings that you're going to be presenting at the November show, November 29 and 30 in Philadelphia? I mentioned a couple. There was the railroad. You did a painting of President Obama. You have a remarkable drawing of Ben Franklin. Of course, all the pieces are remarkable. And can you tell us a little more about some of the other? Oh, let me see here. We got to click a button here. Okay, Bruce, are you still there? Bruce, are we hearing each other? Well, you know, what we learn from cycles is what fades out will come back again, kind of like planets around the sun. We'll be able to hear Bruce in a little bit.
I'm here.
Oh, Bruce, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about some of the pieces that are coming on. Getting back, we're zooming here between world history and our own history here in the United States. So we're talking on two different levels at the same time. I pardon our listeners. We're a little bit of running two tracks. But getting back on track with the United States, can you tell us a little bit about some of the pieces that you're debuting for this special event in November 29 and 30 in Philadelphia, the We the People Art Show?
Well, as you mentioned a few of them, there's also Lincoln. And in this piece, I think I managed to carry the sadness in his eyes as the leader of what he was having to deal with and what he, you know, he was trying to form and rejoin a country together. And that could be argued on both sides. But then there's Nature's Child. Nature's Child is a woman playing a violin in a field of flowers with a dogwood, a pink dogwood back behind her, something as simple as the solitude and the enjoyment of just creating music for yourself.
Yes.
There's three large paintings, Liberty carrying a staff with a torch at the top, so that we're reminded that, you know, she has to defend herself from time to time, and the defense is as much an intellectual defense, not a physical defense. And then there's the guardian angel carrying the American flag, and rather large, but these pieces are 6 feet by 8 foot oils. Then there's Justice without the blindfold, because she's really got to open her eyes to see what's going on. They say Justice was blind, it was a good idea. But Justice hasn't been blind, and it needs to take the blindfold and see clearly the society as a whole. And that was my interpretation of it. Then there's a piece called Back Alley Blues. And it's fire escapes in the back alley and a bunch of jazz musicians playing separately but together. And that basically shows, look at what they can accomplish. And these people are from all walks of life. They're different people. They're dressed differently. You see graffiti on the wall, and a lot of the graffiti has some of the old blues players, their names. I enjoy that piece a lot. And then there's a subway piece. It's called American Dream. People coming home from a hard day's work, and they're dragging, and they're tired, and you see them. There's another subway piece, which is them getting off the subway from the outside, the ones on the inside.
Yeah.
That one I'm working on now. There's a Philadelphia scene where you see where we have been. It's more closely related to the way people are walking and talking now. Almost everybody has a cell phone in their hand. And they're crossing back and forth in front of City Hall in Philadelphia.
Yes.
And you see all different characters in that. There's probably 30 different characters in that piece. And then there's one that actually just sold called Vanishing Time Family Farm, because you've seen a lot of family farms just disappear. They can't keep up the work in this society. Corporate farms are taking them over.
Yes.
We've lost a lot of them. But it reminded me, because I worked on a farm that looked just like this with two brothers growing up. And I enjoyed it so much working on that farm. I took my boys up there when they became teenagers, and they enjoyed working on the farm.
It's quite an array of pieces that you have, and quite a lot of different aspects of our society are being reflected in the vast array that you're going to be presenting here. That's what I'm excited about. You know, when we look at popular media of all kinds, from the writings of H.G. Wells to the Star Trek movies to popular television, very often one of the most popular themes in any medium is stories that involve time travel, because we like to connect with our past to realize where we are now. And ladies and gentlemen, I suggest that we can all become time travelers. If you go by a window and you see a painting there in a store, go in, take a look at it. Go to your museum, take a look at the arts. When I was coming up with the theory of color rhythms, one of the ways that I was able to understand how the cycles were moving and to face where they are and accurately determine the highs and the lows, that was a difficult job. But I began to understand that as I went to the Philadelphia Art Museum and many other museums around this country. I lived in many states. That was one of the things that started to give me the aha, this is where we are. Bruce, we're about to wrap up here, and we're in the final 30 seconds. Do you have a final message for our listeners?
Just one thought. Stay true to yourself. Follow your better angels, and they'll never lead you wrong.
You're right, Bruce, and the angels have led you in some angelic art. Folks, brucemcoyle.com. You can find out about his art show in November 29 and 30 in Philadelphia. Also, do what I did. Check out the Kickstarter. If you want to take a step into the future and end the era of starving artists, remember this Kickstarter link there. But find out the beautiful art as represented here, because it represents us all in a very special way. It is both timeless and timely, and is what we are. Thank you for listening. I'm David Katzmeyer, your host at the Cycles of Change radio program. Good night.
Thank you, David.